Hi, this is Ellen Thurston. I'm here with Gary Grossman. It is June 26th, 2016, and here we go. Hi, Gary Grossman. It's so good to have you here in Hudson, New York.
Thank you, Ellen. It is a pleasure to be back. Everything about Hudson is still with me, including the zip code, which is one of my secret codes and passwords. I just remember now. Everybody knows.
Oh, now everybody knows. But you're here for the 50th anniversary of your graduation from high school.
Hudson High School, 1966. And it, in many ways, just seems like it was yesterday, 2 weeks ago, a month ago. We had a walk through the high school this past weekend while we had our celebration. And I swear to God, it all came rushing back, including the nightmares that I would not remember my combination to my locker. But the band, classrooms, I remember who taught in what classrooms, where the library was. And a full confession, as soon as we went in the library, I remembered where the old National Geographic magazines were now. That's something a boy would say.
Were they still there?
They weren't, but I could point out where they should have been. But maybe a good idea they're not, since it's an elementary school now.
They moved them. I mean, how do you cope with change well?
Well, I have to, because everything is changing at light speed today.
That's true.
What used to take 20 or 30 years for a transformation now is 18 months. You just look at it in terms of technology. But the relationships are still there, and those are the things that really ground me. When I come back to Hudson, which is often once a year, sometimes to stay overnight, sometimes just a few hours, I get grounded. I find myself. My soul is here. And even though I moved out when I went to college, and all the years since, it's still where I come back and really find myself. And I mean that sincerely.
Right. Where did you go to college?
I went to Emerson College in Boston, then Boston University for a graduate degree. But I stayed in Boston. I went in 1966. I stayed in Boston for 14 years, working in television. I wrote for newspapers there, and I taught college. And in fact, the role models for my teaching were my teachers from Hudson High School, and even earlier.
Wow. Well, you've had a checkered career, one might say, I think.
Well, some say I might be on the witness protection plan with all the things that I do, but I'm not. I learned from, I think, my parents to open yourself up to all sorts of possibilities. Some of them were the arts. Some of them could be, you know, hard work. I did work one summer on Rip Van Winkle Bridge in construction and laying down a new asphalt on the bridge. But I was drawn to the creative side, and I worked as in high school as a rock DJ at WHUC.
I see. I have a picture of you in the studio. With headphones on,
right.
And I looked at this picture for a very long time and could not figure out, it looked like you had a Donald Trump hairdo, if you'll pardon me, but it turns out to be either a yarmulke or
No, it's up there, it's, because I have the earphones around my neck, it's just this long kind of beetle hair that was beginning to grow out.
Oh, that is your hair, sorry, but it was not a comb.
No. I think we all kind of had that hair sweeping over our forehead at that point. It was the rock era. We were all beginning to grow our hair longer, a little different than the crew cuts that I had for most of my life in Hudson. And we were beginning to express ourselves.
How old were you at this
point? I started as a DJ on March 19th, 1963. Mm-hmm. In the photograph that you have, I think I was 17. It might have been a year before I went to college, 17, or the year I went to college.
And what station was it?
That was WHUC.
And that was a commercial station?
Commercial, 1230. It's used to be on Route 66. It still broadcasts in Hudson, but it's programmed, I believe, out of Poughkeepsie. And it is as local a station as many local stations are today, calling themselves local. Your really local.
Yes, if we could make a little plug here. We call ourselves a creative community hands-on radio. And it truly is a community station. People, anybody that wants to, you know, have a program can kind of come in and pitch it. And we have many different kinds of people and many different parts of the community. It takes a community to make a community.
It does.
I guess.
And it's wonderful. I've been listening to the station since it came into reception area when I was on the Mass Pike. Mm-hmm. And I've been listening ever since, and even this morning. And it's wonderful programming. Maybe I should talk to you guys about bringing Teen Time back. That was the show I did on WHUC.
Uh-huh. Well, we do have teens represented. There are a couple of teen programs.
Well, this would be teens for basically the class of 66. They
oh,
would be the
60s okay.
rock era music, the oldies.
You could do that from afar. You
yeah.
live in L.A. now?
I live in L.A.
Mm-hmm. Well, we could get you on there.
Okay. But it's a great station. It really, really is. And congratulations.
Oh, thank you for
to
that.
Me, with deregulation, what's happened in radio, with the ownership that is able to own and control hundreds of stations, local radio, much like local television, has just basically evaporated as a means to serve the community.
That's right, and there are fewer news outlets, just generally
Completely.
Speaking. Newspapers seem to be going down,
well,
you know, as
to that
we speak.
Point, every radio station, when I was coming up, every radio station, whether it was WABC in New York or WTRY in Albany doing rock or WROW or WHUC, we all had to have news on the hour and we had news on the half hour. So as teenagers, whatever we were listening to, we were plugged into the world because we listened to the radio all the time, but we had news constantly. Now with regulation out the window, and with so many people assembling their own playlists, you know, on their iPods or whatever other devices, and thousands of songs that you can store, they're not listening to news. And I think it really is affecting the vote in this country and how informed people are, or I'll put it another way, how truly less informed people are, particularly younger people coming up, because they just don't know what's going on. And it used to be a requirement.
Now, I know you're also a TV producer, as I understand
yes.
it. And when we get to that, let's talk about what's happening in television with the news as well.
Absolutely.
To get back to the reunion, aside from people are always the same, they don't change that much. But do their looks change at all? Do you recognize everyone?
The looks change. I recognize many people. The names often aren't their front of mind. And sometimes it's embarrassing because I recognize somebody and the name just doesn't come out. And other times the name is there and I'm trying to place how I remember them, and then we nail it. But it's not just, in truth, having grown up in Hudson, it's not really just a high school reunion. It's a life reunion. We grew up together from
right.
kindergarten on, or came together in sixth grade, or then came together in high school with similar friends, even if we hadn't met one another, because the kids from Greenport or further out in Columbia mm-hmm. County or wherever from schools, wherever they were, we all knew each other. We all did everything together. We all went to Johnny Ware's for hot dogs. We all had
Where was
Paramount.
Johnny Ware's?
Down, I think, 3rd Street and Union.
3rd and Union?
Yeah, maybe 2nd and Union, but I think it was around there. And we had the same experiences. We all saw when Odds Against Tomorrow came into Hudson in 1959. We all were in school together. The moment the announcement came that President Kennedy had been shot, we were all on Warren Street when Robert Kennedy was running for Ken Keating's Senate seat and had a parade up Warren Street.
I know they used to have parades that went up
right.
Warren and it's, other streets, mm-hmm. I think, too. Now they all come down.
Well, isn't it so much smarter going down?
It does seem
I
smarter.
Must say, because I marched in bands and Cub Scouts, and parades and Cub Scouts, in Boy Scouts, and then the Hudson High School Band, and particularly in the high school band, we had heavy wool uniforms. And by the time we got, particularly on Memorial Day, to the cemetery, which is where it would end, we were probably 27 pounds lighter. But so marching down, much smarter. I wish that we had done that years ago.
I don't know if this is the same era or not, but do you know Peter Chipkowski?
I don't, no.
Well, his grandfather, or was it his father? Oh, his father, I think, took videos of all the parades, and they lived on Front Street. There was, he had a grocery store, Chip's Grocery, I think it was called. Anyway,
I think I know where it was.
So there are some of those parades actually memorialized.
Are they being archived anywhere?
Well, one hopes. You know, the library is now in the old Armory building.
Oh, it is? Okay.
Yes, and it just opened about a month ago, I think, and we're very proud of the new library.
Well,
I always say that with that library and with the radio station, we're now an adult community.
Absolutely.
We're growing up.
And I grew up just half a block away from the Armory on State Street, 531 State Street, which I actually visited last fall. I was walking up the alley behind State Street, and I was peering in, and I had not been in the house since I was 7 years old, and there was a wonderful woman who owns the house, she and her husband, and I explained that I wasn't a stalker, and would it be possible to come in, and she invited me in, and I lived on the second floor, my grandmother on the first floor, and some of the same furnishings were there that she pointed out, and it just all came rushing back to me, and that was wonderful. And then I lived on Jocelyn Place after, near the high school, and similarly, I went over to that house. I parked my car in front, looking at the house, and a truck, a 4x4, came up, rolled into the driveway, and saw me looking, and I got out of the car and said, "Hi, you still live here? I'd love to see it." And the gentleman looked at me and wanted a little bit more information. As I found out pretty quickly, he was a state trooper who lived in the house. So again, I explained, I'm not a stalker. I used to live here. There's where my bedroom was. I could describe things in the basement. And he was wonderful, and he let me in. And I went down to the basement where my dad had recovered a workbench that had been my grandfather's, and that was still down there. We went up to my room, which seems smaller today than it did when I was a kid.
Yeah.
And that was wonderful. But again, those touchstones, and I said, Hudson is really my soul, and it flows through me. It's just doing things like that ground me. I live in Los Angeles. It's very different. We live in a small part of a big city, but it's still a big city. And realizing where I came from and who I am and all the experiences of my life and everything I know came from Hudson.
Right.
It's something that maybe is so important for me to keep doing. And it's not just nostalgia, it's the connection.
Well, good. Well, you'll be back often.
Will.
So that's a little trip down memory lane. But how did you get into publishing all these books? I see a table loaded here.
Well, and there are more. When I graduated college, I said one of the stupidest, silliest things I'd ever said in my life. It was, thank goodness I'll never have to write again. Well, of course, it was ridiculous because within 2 weeks I was doing writing. I went into television, having started in radio in Hudson. I went into television in Boston and television news and documentaries. And of course, that led to writing and more writing and more writing. And from there, I taught college at Emerson College. And lo and behold, what did I spend a lot of time on? Teaching writing. Then, in 1974, I began writing a book called Superman Serial, S-E-R-I-A-L to serial C-E-R-E-A-L, because there was no book that covered early television history, and I was teaching a history class on early television.
And it would have slipped away.
Right. So I wrote some publishers and said, here's what I'd like to do. One of them said yes. And what do I write about? I wrote, to start with, the fact that, we had the first television set on our block on State Street. And by proxy,
that wasn't there.
But by proxy, it made me a pretty popular kid. And what did we watch? We watched The Adventures of Superman. So again, even that connected right to Hudson. From there, I wanted to find out if I could actually write or if this was just a fluke. And I began freelancing articles, first for the New York Times, then the Boston newspapers. Then I got a job as a columnist at the Boston Herald American. Mm-hmm. And I was the TV critic with a daily column. And in truth, that was the best writing experience I ever had, because every day at 3 o'clock, no matter what was happening, I had a deadline and I had to hit it. So if there was a phone call and I had to deal with something there, I had to be able to get back into the article, mm-hmm. get back into the thought, and that's been fabulous. But flash forward to, and I wrote another book on the history of children's television called Saturday Morning TV. Again, why? Because we grew up watching all the children's shows here in Hudson out of the Albany stations.
But you did, the Superman book became a series of Superman books.
No, this is just one book.
Oh,
it is? Yes, just one. Okay. But then in 1980, I moved to Los Angeles and got back into television, which I'd been doing in Boston. And for, virtually nonstop, I was producing shows for NBC and CBS and ABC. I produced Entertainment Tonight. I went on to start a production company, Weller Grossman Productions, and we helped launch many, many cable networks with thousands of shows. But on Rob Weller, my business partner, and I were in New York City having a meeting with the History Channel one day. And someone in the History Channel meeting said, wait till that goes by. My business partner and I, Rob Weller of Weller Grossman Productions, were in New York for a business meeting with the History Channel. And someone on that particular day said, do you think we're running out of history? Now that was at the History Channel.
Uh-huh.
And I said, no. Don't worry, there will always be history. That I remember that date. I remember that date very, very clearly, because that date was September 10th, 2001.
Uh-huh.
The next day, the world changed, September 11th. And it was on our ride back to California, because we couldn't get a plane. Mm. It was our ride back to California that I began thinking about a novel, and a novel that would look at the world as it is, and the intricacies of the world, and the relationships, and the alliances that were made, with a target that would be worth waiting 25, 30, 40 years. And what would be worth waiting that long? It's the presidency itself. How could the presidency of the United States actually be infiltrated by a sleeper, a sleeper cell spy? And that became Executive Actions.
And so the executive books, if mm-hmm. I can call them that, how many did you actually write?
There are three: Executive Actions, Executive Treason, and Executive Command. Mm-hmm. And curiously, the night of September 11th, I was listening to a radio broadcast, AP News, in New York, and there was a report from Hudson, New York, that someone was seen or reported suspiciously going to the reservoir.
To the water treatment plant.
Right,
yeah.
Right. You remember?
I do.
And that, of course, I don't know if anything ever came of that, but that in itself became the subject of my third novel, Executive Command, where water, our most valuable and vulnerable natural resource, is the target, terrorist targets.
Very interesting. I just want to assure you that the man was not a terrorist, and someone had suggested, because it's a beautiful spot scenically, he was taking a photograph of the scene.
But on September.
And he ended up getting deported, not because of that act, but because of, I think he'd taken someone in who was living with him, and
okay.
I don't know.
Well,
I shouldn't talk about
it.
No,
you've answered
the
story for me because I didn't know if there was any follow-up. But that was on the national news the night of after the attack on the World Trade Center.
Right. Wow.
So that seed for the third book actually came at the same time that the first book came along.
Right.
And I just was committed to write. Now, I still produce television, and I continue to produce television at that point. But it was a brand new career that I started in my 50s.
Let me ask you if you have any impression of how many people here at the reunion, or in your class, mm-hmm. I should say, actually moved out of Hudson and into the bigger world.
That's a great question, Ellen. I think we were among the first classes, maybe 1964, 65, 66, we were among the first classes to go out and explore the rest of the world because there was more opportunity. And again, I think it had to do with, you know, our relationship with the news. Now, that's a broad statement because every year there were people who did move on. But there's also a good group of kids then, grown-ups now, adults, our class members, who have stayed in Hudson, stayed in Columbia County, mm-hmm. and have been very important to the community.
That's right.
Giffey Whitbeck among them. And others who have been in business and in other professions. And again, there's nothing like a high school reunion as the great equalizer.
That's true.
It really is, because it's not about resumes, and it's wonderful to be here today. I'm almost embarrassed with the attention. In fact, I am. But the equalizer is our experience and who we are and what we all had together here
right.
in Hudson, whether it was going to Oakdale or in the summer and skating in the winter, whether it was going to, in August, the fireworks at the high school football field that the firemen
uh-huh.
put on.
Oh,
big event every August.
We don't do fireworks here except for Flag Day now. July 4th.
Well, this was a big August event. Huge.
August.
And it would be booked with acts and all sorts of things. But we all had that experience together. We went to Spook Rock and swam. We went to Bashbish and Bashbish Falls, Lake Taconic, and the old part of the lake. And then they opened a new beach. And the haunts that we would go to, mm-hmm. Kozel still standing. And
right,
where
still
we had,
there.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. That leads me to ask, I hope I'm going to remember what leads me to ask. People who stayed and raised families mm-hmm. here and have been here for a very long time, when the town really began to change mm-hmm. a few years back, when all the antique dealers came in and sort of, I think, rescued, in a way, Warren Street. People who had lived here all their lives were, some of them, bemoaning the fact that it wasn't like the good old days.
Mm-hmm.
And the good old days were not going to come back. I mean,
well, the good old days went away. The good old days were principally post-war in the 50s and the early 60s, but by the time we were in high school, the big box stores, shopping centers were opening
exactly.
on Route 9, and shoe stores were closing on Warren Street, clothing stores were closing on Warren Street, drug stores were closing on Warren Street, people were beginning to geographically move businesses out there, and Warren Street started becoming a ghost town. When I moved out in 1966, I can't tell you how many storefronts there were that were empty. My dad had a store, Elting and Grossman, an appliance store right at Park Plaza. It's now the Chinese restaurant.
Park Place?
Park Place, and right next to what was Basin's, and just a few doors down from Suddy's, and the Columbia Diner was active. But the mom-and-pop stores really began
right.
disappearing. Now, what's great is that there was an influx of arts that have come into Hudson. And restaurants. What's unfortunate is that I imagine so many people in the community can't afford to eat at the restaurants on Warren Street.
Right.
Because
but it's beginning to diversify more, mm-hmm. I think, and it's a real foodie place now.
It sure is. Now, one of my first experiences with the transformation, I came back to visit all my relatives. Sadly, they are all at the cemetery. But we were driving, my mom was with me, and we were driving down Columbia Street, and I noticed an open door in an important building in our lives. It was the old Grossman Bakery on Columbia Street.
Uh-huh.
And I saw the door was open.
But that was the family business?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And I said, Mom, I have to, the door's open. The last time I was in the bakery, I was 4 years old, which I remember, but then it closed up. She said, no, that's probably, you can't go up there. And I said, no, you stay in the car, I'm going to go up. I went up, and I opened the door all the way, and there was a desk like the one we're sitting at with a nice tapestry on the table, not a desk, but a table, and flyers. And I looked and I said, well, you know, what is this? And they said, well, why are you asking? It seemed pretty apparent what it was, but I hadn't really focused on it. And I said, well, because my name's on the building. It still says Grossman in blue cobalt glass
uh-huh.
on the old Grossman Bakery.
Is it number 434?
You know, I don't remember, but it is what TSL Limited
right.
is.
Mm-hmm. Right. That's good.
Yes.
That's their address.
And I met Claudia Musman,
Linda
Musman and Claudia Bruce, and we became very good friends. And what they have done there, and what the Hudson Opera House is doing here, bringing art to the community, being programs to the community, we had nothing of this, nothing in the day. The only things that we had were occasionally there would be lectures at the high school. People would come in from out of town and do slideshows mm-hmm. of their travels around the world. We would have our band concerts. There were some homegrown theatrical plays that would be staged. That was basically it. We'd have to go down to Bard for any theater.
Right. Well, first of all, I want to make a plug also for the high school. They have great arts programs.
Great.
The kids really are lucky. Good music program, good theater program. They do
great.
A musical every year, and they're surprisingly good. I mean,
fabulous.
You'd be amazed. Anyway, well, when I came here about 21 years ago, I'll say, there was one gallery, Carrie Haddad's gallery,
and I stopped in there
in
yesterday.
This block. She's mm-hmm. now moved uptown.
Yep, right to 7th Street.
That was it. So we would, if there was an opening, we'd get all dressed up, go to the opening, and then we'd go next door, or two doors down, I think, to Mama Rose's,
mm-hmm.
the only restaurant sort of that was open at that time. And things then have rapidly changed, of course. And, you know, it changes part of life. So
it is.
The demise of Warren Street was echoed all over upstate New York. There are little Rust Belt towns mm-hmm. In other counties as well. So
well, and look at Newburgh hasn't turned around the way Hudson has. Kingston hasn't turned around the way Hudson has. We're fortunate that it's become a home.
I'll say.
Now, my cousin of mine, Irving Price, in the 1970s, wrote a book called Buying Country Property. It became uh-huh. a New York Times bestseller, and that's what opened people's minds in New York to Columbia County.
Right.
Because the days of escaping and going to the Catskills, people had air conditioning. They didn't need to just send
right.
their families to the Catskills for the summer. They could come up to Hudson and Columbia County for the weekend
yeah.
or a three-day weekend. The train, right up.
That's right. Well, there are days when I wonder if tourism is such a good thing and of all this progress, you know, when I'm circling the block trying to find a parking space of all things. I mean, this is a city, and it has the same problems as a big city has. But it still has a diverse population, and that, I think, draws people here rather than, you know, keeping them away. It's, when I started looking at property, I looked at Rhinebeck. Mm-hmm. I thought it was too, sorry Rhinebeck, but I don't mean this in a bad way. It was all sort of sandblasted and clean and mm-hmm. cute. And after living in New York, you're used to a kind of diverse population and different things going on and edginess and unexpected things right. happening. So that's what Hudson is.
And Hudson has so much history. It was the number two. It just missed being the state capital by one vote.
I know.
It's the home of the cocktail. Did you know that?
Oh, yes, I did.
Okay, 1806. And considered one of the most desirable places now in the country.
Right.
Now we just have to be careful how we shore up for the future with the rising waters in the Hudson.
Yes,
and
we
that
do
is
have
a major
careful.
Important thing to focus on, which is also an exhibit here at the Hudson Opera House.
And it'll be up through, I think, July 6th, so people should come see it.
I'd encourage everyone to see it. It is an eye-opener. As I'll talk about in a little bit when we have our event here at the Hudson Opera House today, kids who were born 4 years ago will be celebrating their 50th high school reunion in the year 2080, which is noted outside as the year when, if we don't start preparing for it now, the waters will be on Front Street from the Hudson River.
And it will, and the tracks, Amtrak
will
tracks
be underwater.
Will be covered?
Correct.
Yeah.
So
we better get...
Time's a-wasting.
That's right. Get cracking. I couldn't believe what I found here. It said that you have produced, I think it was 10,000?
10,000 shows. More than 10,000 shows. Well, we helped launch Home and Garden, HGTV,
uh-huh.
The History Channel when it signed on, National Geographic Channel, this, I say we, my production company, my business partner, Rob Weller, and I... And so many of the cable channels just needed more and more and more shows. So we would get a lot of very big orders. Now, that was part of television's change as cable came along, when there were very specific brands that the cable channels wanted. Today, A&E is no longer arts and entertainment. History has some history, mm-hmm. but much of it isn't. National Geographic has some shows relative to National Geographic, but it's not the same. What's happened is that reality TV mm-hmm. and competition shows have come in, and whether they're cheaper to produce or every channel is trying to steal each other's audience and become
right.
more milquetoast, that's changed the shape of television that was huge in the 1990s and into the beginning part of the century. I thought after 2001 that we might return to a period where, now I'm overstating it, but as after the Depression, musicals became important in mm-hmm. movies, feel-good things. Well, I couldn't have been more wrong. Television got meaner. Society got meaner. When Congress is beginning to look like the Jerry Springer show, you know what's happening. And when we have, you know, candidates who are not statesmen or women the way we used to have representatives and aren't representing the nation as much as what they define as their narrow constituency, it seems more about ratings than the best interests of the country.
Well, perhaps you'd be interested in tuning in to some of the Common Council meetings here in Hudson.
Oh, all right.
They are videoed and put on Channel 11, the public access
mm-hmm.
channel. And they're the hijinks that...
So it's everywhere then.
That, yes. It's on the local level, but maybe of interest.
Well,
I'll let you know when they're on.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Ellen.
So I've been talking to Gary Grossman, and we've hardly touched all aspects of his life since he left Hudson, and we're so glad you're back here with the rest of the class.
Thank you. Thank
and,
you.
And the book you're going to be reading from this afternoon.
Old Earth. It's a geological thriller.
It's a bestseller.
Bestseller. It basically covers a wide part of history. I'd say about 4.6 billion years. But I think I'll also do a little read from Executive Actions, which
good.
Is also set, the beginning of it is set in Hudson, and then the book keeps coming back to it. So I thought I'd do a little of Executive Actions as
well.
Oh,
that's great. Apparently Old Earth, I'll read here, an award-winning bestseller taking the grand prize for fiction at the London Book Festival, the Amsterdam Book Festival, and the Hollywood Book Festival, and the best science fiction novel at the New York Festival of Books.
And actually, now, the last one is at the New York Book Festival, best science fiction at the New York Book Festival.
Right.
Yeah, no, I see.
So, when are you coming back to Hudson?
I'll probably be back, let's see, this is June, perhaps October, if not, if it's all right, after the winter.
Oh, that's all right, that's all right. You Californians, you're once a Hudsonian, always a Hudsonian,
exactly.
I'm hoping. And I would love you to meet some of the interns that are at the station and see what they're up to.
It would be my pleasure.
It's really quite astounding.
Absolutely. You know, I started in radio when I was 15, so anybody who I can help inspire or meet with, because I bless the day that I got into the media and at WHUC.
And look what it led to.
Here I am. It led me back to Hudson.
Thank you.
And a great,
Gary
delightful
Grossman.
Conversation with you.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.